Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Maseches Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Zayin, and we got to get ahead with some real azut today. We're holding at the Halakha Mishnah on daf Zayin Ayin Vav Amud Beis, and we finished our Nisrafim, and we're moving on today to the Elu HaNeheragin. I remember Stam Hereg is called the Saif, otherwise we call that Cherev, or Hereg, or Saif. All of them are interrelated because the mocker of this whole concept that we call the Hariga is learned out of a pasuk, as we'll see later on, as that's the way that we refer to Bris, and Nokem Bris, and Cherev Nokem as Bris, and we'll get to why we use the word. But anyway, the Neheragin, which is done with a sword, are only two cases: the Rotzeach and the Anshei Ir HaNidachat. So for murder, or the people who were part of the city that actually was persuaded to go into worship of Avodah Zarah en masse, so these do not get the normal halacha of skila that we saw before, but they are chayev herek. Now when we're talking about murder, we have different levels of murder, obviously, and we're going to have to deal with those. Some of them, of course, we deal with the Masechet Makot, where we deal with the question of golus. Golus is for non-premeditated murder, and there's all types of levels of murder. So what we're talking about over here is the murder that is mentioned in the Pasuk. And the Pasuk speaks, interestingly enough, about particular cases for some reason. Ve'im b'klei barzel hiko v'yomot rotzeachu motu matarotzeach. Ve'im be'even yad asher yamut bo hiko, etc. What exactly do those things mean? I mean, you could kill someone with just about anything, right? So when we talk about rotzeach, so let's talk about the cases in the pasuk. Rotzeach shikat re'ehu be'even o be'barzel. So we have two psukim. One, in fact, speaks about im bechle barzel, and the other one that speaks about im be'even yad. There seems to be a difference between even yad, which is giving a size, an even that you hold in your hand, as opposed to a barzel, which could be anything, maybe a tiny needle or a bullet. So we're going to look into that also. So that would be active. But how about if you hold someone down in a swimming pool and he can't get out of the water? You don't push him in. You just held him down so he couldn't get out. Or suppose he was caught in a fire and you didn't let him escape. Because of that, he died. You're also b'chayev, which is surprising, because normally we speak about the concept of a groma, which is the causing somebody to die or causing a damage, as opposed to the actual asiya. Here, the Mishnah seems to be saying that even if you weren't the one who brought that which killed him ultimately on him, and you actually didn't do anything even in terms of pushing him in any way, you just made this current situation in which he is underwater, you made it impossible for him to change that. That's enough to be mechayev you. For that, we're certainly going to need a special ribui. Let's see that in the Gemara. If, on the other hand, this is surprisingly, if you pushed him into the fire, you pushed him into the water, or the guy ends up drowning in the water, or he ends up getting burnt to death in the fire. But if he were able to get out of there, theoretically, and didn't, then even if he died, you're not considered to be the one that's chayev. Now let's say where she's sabo et hakelev, or she's sabo et hanachash. So you sick a dog or a snake against someone, and the person is killed, the dog mutilates him, the snake actually poisons him, and he dies, then you're putter. But he shich bo et hanachash, if he actually took the mouth of the nachash, and you put the nachash, his hand, you inserted the fangs of the nachash, then that would be the equivalent of injecting him with a hypodermic of poison. So says Rabbi Yehuda. Whereas the Chachomim say, no, even there it's not the equivalent of injecting him with the hypodermic, because who pressed down on the hypodermic needle in that case? Not you, the snake did. So once again, it would only be a groma. So that'd be the question of how do we consider what it is that happens in a snake bite. Is it considered to be a two-step process in which we view the snake as having separate agency for injecting? So now let's take a look at the pasuk. Amar Shmuel. Actually, if you look at the psukim, then you have to ask yourself, Mipnei ma lo nemra yad bebarzel? Why, when it comes to the evan, it says, V'im be'evan yad yamut ba'iko. Evan yad, I mean, seems to be saying a stone that you can hold in your hand. So, I mean, otherwise, why not just say, Im be'evan yad im be'evan yiko? But when it comes to the case of the barzel, it says, V'im bechli barzel hiko. That's really strange. So the evan yad is not a kli, but it is held handheld size. Masha Inkem, when you're talking about metal, it's considered to be a kli, but there it doesn't matter whether he's holding it or not. What would that mean? It's telling you that barzel may meet bechol shehu. There is no particular size that we need to look at. If it is actually an instrument that's made out of metal, then a metal instrument is obviously able to cause death because of its penetrative power. And Tanya Namiachi, Galui v'yaduelef mimisha amarva ya alam shabarzel may meet bechol shehu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu well knows that iron, if it's formed into a kli, can kill no matter how much iron you use in it. Lefichach lo natna Torah bo shiur. So when it came to talking about the barzel, it didn't give a size the way it did by the evan. But of course, hani mili devarzei mivras. This is only in a case where it's actually formed into a usable kli that is able to penetrate. So over there, you can get those small penetrating pieces of metal in a way that they cause a hole in the heart or whatever, and that is certainly going to kill someone. But if you just take a piece of metal and you use it the way you would take a stone, then it's no different than anything else. It would have to be enough to be able to be the size that would kill the guy. You would expect him to die. The next thing that we said in the Mishnah, let me just take a drink because Barnea is after me. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nihyeh bedvaro. That even if you didn't actively attack him, and he's in a position where he's vulnerable, so he's underwater, he's in a room that's burning down, and you prevent his escape, then you would also be chayiv. And on the other hand, if you pushed him into the water, you push him into the fire, and he could have escaped, but didn't for some reason, then you would not be chayiv. So the Reisha Rabuta Kamashman Vasefer Rabuta Kamashman. Obviously, this is, each one of these is taking an extreme position and explaining or expressing something in terms of that contradictory, I say juxtaposed extreme position. The Reisha is telling us something that you wouldn't have thought, and the Sefer is telling us something. The Reisha is telling us, Reisha Rabuta Kamashman, that Afagav Delav Iyu Dechafoi. Look, he wasn't the guy that had this person put under the water. I mean, he walked along. The guy is under the water. All he's doing is sitting on him. You know, it's comfortable. Meanwhile, the guy strangles to death. But he didn't put him there. He just held him down. That's a chiddush that even though he didn't do anything, given deinu yachol lalot misham v'met chaya, nonetheless, the person is chayiv, which we'll have to see how we actually derive that from. Whereas the Sefer is telling a chiddush that even though he did push him into the water, or he did push him into the fire, but given yochel la'alot misham, since that push was not necessarily going to be fatal because he would have been able to escape, and he didn't escape, the mate, you would even so be putter. So the question is, where do we get the idea that just keeping a person in a position where he ultimately is going to die because he can't breathe, or in the case of the fire, why would that be an act of killing? Where do we see that? Omar Shmuel, well, we have a fascinating additional term in the list of the motivations that the Torah speaks about when it talks about the difference between someone who kills b'mezid and someone who is chayev golus in the Ari Miklat. And what it says over there is, O be'eva hikahu biyado v'yomot. And now, for some reason, it's necessary to hear this story that be'eva he called v'yamot. Now, I understand that we've got cases where people kill, and it's got a lot of things like this. Oh, we have him be'evan yad asher yamut bo, he killed. Oh, bichli eitz yad asher yamut bo. Over there, it specifies all these psukim we're going to be looking at. Ve'im besin'ah yehedafenu. All right, so he pushes it. Oh, he shlich alav b'tzdiya. He throws something on him as the person is walking under him. Oh, ve'eva hikahu biyado. Or in hatred, he hits him with his hand. I mean, like, what? You know, what's the point? You know, just tell me some general din, and I'll know that he's chayev. And the point over here seems to be that it's adding a situation which is now going to be covered by the fact that this was an act of hatred against him. So what would that be? That's exactly the point. By saying that, it would mean even if you obeva is adding, even if your hatred caused him to remain in a situation where it was clear that that situation would kill him. So now there was a case where a guy, who gave the mitzantzim alachayuta dechavrei b'shim shavameta, a person took a friend's, these are all erstwhile friends by the time we get to it, but anyway, he took his friend's animal and put it outside and locked it outside to the point where it ended up dying of sunstroke. So Ravina says, well, you're chayev. Ravacha Baraf says, well, that's just a groma. You put it outside and therefore it died, but why would you be chayev? Ravina says, well, it's a kavachomer. If we're talking about a rotseach, now in the case of a rotseach, the Torah is very careful to make a distinction between somebody who does something purposefully and somebody who did not do it purposefully. And we have like two completely different parshas in the Torah for the chiyav of Ari Miklat versus the chiyav of a mezid. So over there, a shogeg is not kemezid, an ones is not keratzon, and even so, it was expansive enough to say that just holding someone in that position, even though you didn't put them in that position, and over there you would be chayev. So this guy who locked his friend's animal out, the animal originally was out, but he could have come in, and now he makes sure that the animal can't come in. So isn't it kosher that we're just talking about nezik in here? And generally speaking, people are much more likely to be chayev for an act of nezikin because over there, remember, adam muad la'olam. And it doesn't matter whether you did shogeg or mezid or ones or rotzayin. Eno, over there, it's all the same. Eno din shechiev behemet ha-metzamtzeim. So for sure, holding that animal outside, even though you didn't put it there, you should be chayev. Rav Acha Barav says, I disagree. I say you're potter. Omer of Mesharsha. Now, I know that my grandfather's logic over here is not very clear. I mean, what it was that we brought a riot to seemed to be pretty clear. Let me explain to you what my grandfather holds. And his grandfather was Rav Acha Barav, who said that you're potter. I'll tell you. He says, take a look in the pasuk. It says, Mot yumat hamakeh. This is yet another one of those examples where the Torah repeats a word that seems to be saying nothing or adding nothing. In that case, it ends with Ibeivaiko Mod Yumat Hamake Rotseahu. I mean, obviously he murdered the guy. So what's the point? Of course he's a Rotseah. Therefore it's coming to tell me this new halach of Obeiva, in which his enmity itself ended up having the guy die, not because he did something. It was the enmity, meaning just not letting him out of the situation that he was in. There, you're chayev because it was murder, but only because it was murder. The only place that the Torah says this new halacha was in the context of murder, but in the context of nezikin, benizakim, lochi of lan mitzamtzim. That is my grandpa's explanation, and it makes a lot of sense to me. Oh, my Rava. Kifato, umet bira'av. Now, suppose you tie someone up, and he dies from hunger. So, I mean, is that the same thing as holding him down under the water? Because, I mean, here he can't get food, so he's going to die, and there he can't get air, so he's going to die. So, it sounds like it ought to be the same. And yet, Rava claims that if he dies bira'av, that you would be potter, even though you put him into a position over here by tying him where he's going to die from hunger. So then that means that the ime be'eva, the question of that be'eva would have to be that the thing that killed him has begun acting on him at this point. So hunger that kills is a particular level of malnourishment that has not begun now. Matter of fact, this guy is completely satisfied by having just eaten his cholent on Shabbos. You couldn't get another piece into him. And therefore, I mean, you understand that in that case, the process of his dying from has not begun. And that only in that case, says Rava, was there a chiyuv of the person to keep him from getting out of his situation. Furthermore, let me give you some other examples, says Rava. Suppose the person was tied up in the sun and he ended up dying from sunstroke. Or you actually tied him up in a place where it was very cold and he died from hypothermia. So, betzina v'mate. In such cases, you would be chayev, because the location that he had been tied up in by you had already been exposed to the thing that would kill him. So the intense cold was going to kill him, and the intense ultraviolet would have killed him. So he's chayev. But if you put him in a place where sof chamalavo, right now, there is no sun, or right now, sof tzinalavo, right now, it is not intensely cold, but we are expecting a blizzard. So then, since at the time you weren't putting him in a position where the murder weapon, so to speak, would have acted on him, therefore you were potter. Furthermore, says Rava, if you tie a guy up in front of a lion, kifatolifne ari, then you're potter. If you tie him up in front of mosquitoes who end up biting him to death, then you're chayev. And exactly the difference over here. Some say that the issue is that, as Rashi explains, look, the guy would have died anyway because the lion would have gotten him no matter what. Others learn just the opposite. Tying someone in front of a lion doesn't necessarily harm somebody. It's just a big cat. I mean, if it's not hungry and doesn't want to eat at this particular point, you know, you just talk kitty, kitty, kitty to the lion and hope for the best. So that's how others learn. There's a number of different pirushim in this. The idea of the yitushim is that over there you've got a mass of insects that ultimately are going to cause him to die either with an allergic reaction. But the point is that over there, he would easily have fought off these mosquitoes to that point, and therefore you'd be chayev. Whereas Ravashi says not so, because the mosquitoes, it's not the same mosquitoes, right? I mean, it's hane asli v'hane atu. You're saying that it's the same as putting him out in the sun, but there are millions of mosquitoes over here in this swarm, right? So you're telling me, well, it already started acting on him. What is it? The swarm? I mean, since when is a swarm an entity? Why don't we view each one of these mosquitoes as a separate organism, and therefore what one is doing is not what the other is doing, and we don't look at it as a single unit in which the death weapon, the murder weapon, was there at the beginning. That is Ravashi's far. All right, so the question is, do we, in fact, look at a swarm as a single unit? I mean, obviously, we don't need the same molecules. We don't need the same light. I mean, if the guy is being, he was swimming under water where it wasn't a swimming pool. Let's say it was a flowing, deep stream. Are you going to say, well, the water molecules that were there originally are not the water molecules that are here now, so we don't look at it as one thing? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So that's basically the machlokas over here. I mean, at what point do we consider something to be the same? We're not looking at the same photons when the sun is there originally as we're looking at now. So, okay, this we need to look into, try to see if we can give a more concrete definition to the machlokas over here with Ravashi and Rava. Itmar, how about another question? How about if you put, somebody is asleep, and you put a plastic bag over him, and now he suffocates to death. So, kafa alav gigit. Or, let's say the guy's fast asleep, you open up the skylight on the roof, it is freezing outside, and the guy ends up freezing to death. So, Rava v'Rebbe Zeira, one says you'd be chayv in both of those cases, and one said you would be potter. But it doesn't tell us who said what. Now, we seem to be able to conclude on our own who said what. Tistayim de Rava hu de Omar potter. It appears that Rava would be the one to say potter, because we just had before that Rava said if you tie a guy up and now he can't eat and he dies from hunger, that you're potter. So that seems to be the same situation over here. You put a barrel over him, was the case, not a plastic bag that was would literally, maybe you'd say, is so tightly around him, it actually closes up his nose. So let's take the case of the Gemara. It was like a barrel. And at the moment that you put in the barrel over that person's head, there was sufficient oxygen that he was going to live for a minute, right? At that point, there was no poisonous fumes that would have killed him. It's not that he's got such a large amount of carbon dioxide that there's no oxygen for him to breathe. He has oxygen. And Rava said that if you had tied someone up and he was going to ultimately die of hunger, that you're potter. So the same thing is true over here. He's going to die of oxygen starvation. But right now, the oxygen starvation has not begun. And the main yesod of Rava is that the sun's got to be out, or the cold's got to be there, or the lack of oxygen had to have already begun. So that would mean that Rava is the one who says that the guy is putter. Well, that's strange, because I have a proof that actually Rebbe Zeira is the one who says that he's putter. The Omer Rebbe Zeira, Hai man da aile lechavri bebeta da shisha. So this seems to be exactly this case. A guy takes someone and puts him into an airtight chamber that is lined with marble, tightly sealed. There's no way that oxygen can get in. And then he lights a candle in that chamber to use up the oxygen. And the guy dies. So then he's chayev. So what do you see? You see that the only reason that he's chayev is because he's used up the oxygen. But if he wouldn't have lit that candle, the fact that the person is going to end up using up the oxygen, that is not enough to be mechayev you. So that's exactly, you claim Rava was the same that says you're putter, and here we see it's Rebbe Zeira who's the one who says it's putter. Well, they can't both say you're putter because there's a machlokas here. So what am I missing? Amre, well, there's a difference. If you've got this room, so hatam belo shraga, lo matchil havla, if you hadn't lit that candle at that shaite, at that moment itself, there was as yet no impact on his breathing because he's in a large room. And therefore, Rebbe Zeira says, I feel that you need to have the murder weapon, so to speak, already active at the time that you're preventing his escape. Bashenken hocha, in the case where you have just a plastic bag and even just this barrel that you put over him, the moment that you put that over him, he's already immediately going to sense the lack of oxygen. And therefore, in that case, I would say he's chayev. So that would be the difference between Rava and Rebbe Zeira. Omar Rava, suppose you push somebody into a bar. Now, when you push the guy into the bar, there was a ladder that was there that he could have escaped on. Now, somebody pulls out the ladder. For that matter, you yourself go and you pull out the ladder. You're still potter, afilu hu kadam v'silko, because the original act of throwing the person into this bar was not an act of murder. Taking out the ladder that was the reason it was not an act of murder is not an act of murder. It's a grama of murder. You're making it impossible for him to escape. But the Torah was never mechayev you just on the groma. And therefore, since be'idna deshade, at the time that you threw him into the bor, yochol la'alotu, he could have come out, so then there's no act that's mechayev you. I've got another case. You shoot a guy with an arrow, and this guy has got this force field in front of him that is going to keep that arrow from hitting him. When you have a remote control of the force field, after shooting the arrow, you press your remote control, the force field goes down, the arrow penetrates, and the guy is dead. It's the same exact thing, and it doesn't matter whether somebody else turns off the force field or you turn off the force field. The point is, you'd still be potter, because to be eaten at the shadya de mifsek paske giret, at the time that you shot the arrow, that arrow had a particular point at which it was going to stop, and at that point, further, whatever energy you imparted into that arrow was irrelevant to the case because it wasn't going to reach the guy. Now, the fact that afterwards we allow the arrow to reach him, that is not seen as being inherent in the act of shooting the arrow initially, and therefore it would be patra. Another case like that, you shoot an arrow at somebody who has exactly what he needs in his hand to be able to survive the attack. So he's got these bandages, and he's got these sealing chemicals, and he's gonna make it, even though you got him. And somebody else comes and takes all of those medications and throws them to the wind, or you yourself go and throw it to the wind. You're potter for the same reason. To be idna deshadabe, yachol alitra potaya, he could have managed to make himself better, and he wouldn't have died, so it wasn't a murderous blow. Says Rav Ashi, I mean, if that's the case, it doesn't have to be in his hands. I mean, if he's, let's say, a block away from Kupat Cholim, and he's got the Samanim and the Shuk, it would be the same thing. If, as long as he had an ability to get these things, you wouldn't be chayav. Omar le Rav Acha b'reid Rav el Rashi. I mean, something else. Suppose there was nothing that could have saved him at the time that you shot the arrow. So you shoot the arrow, and then what happened was, Superman lands right next to him with a supply of exactly what he needs in order to survive the attack. So this is the opposite case. So at the time that you shot him, he should have died. But he didn't die because it's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's actually Super Koopa. Or maybe it's even Hatsola. I don't know. But the point is, he ended up being saved. So what's the din? Omar Leiz, Rav Ashi said to Rav Acha, look, basically, he walked out of court already free and clear. Because how are we going to be mechay of him if in the end, basically, this person ends up with what he needed? So for all intents and purposes, at that moment, you would not have been able to convict him. It's true the guy ended up dying, but that's because he didn't trust Superman. But, I mean, he could have saved himself. The Omar Rava. I had another issue. Suppose somebody throws a stone at a wall, and it then falls backwards, so it actually rebounds, and it kills someone on the rebound. What's the din over there? And this guy's good. I mean, he knew exactly what he was doing. He's trying to get the guy, but he figured if he doesn't throw the stone directly at him, so then he's going to be putter. So Rava says, no, he's chayev, because rebound koach is called your koach. It's just been redirected, but it's the same koach which was there originally. And not only that, says Rava, I say that we have a brighter that actually teaches us that, the Farish, the Tana Tuna. So let's say people are playing a game of handball. Now, when you're playing that game, what you're trying to do is to give as much force into that ball as possible. Now, the game, as Rashi has it in those days, was that you would try to throw the ball in such a way that it goes as far as possible in the opposite direction from where you are going to run. and then the person who catches the ball tries to throw the ball at you after he recaptures the ball. An interesting game, right? So now you try to get it to go in one direction. You immediately start running in the other direction. The other guy has to catch the ball and throw it at you and tag you, and then he wins. Okay, cute game. So over there, if you know what you're doing and you throw the ball in such a way that it hits the guy in the head and kills him, so if you do that b'mezid, you would actually be chayev, and they're neharagim. If it's b'shogeg, then you would be chayev to go to Ari Miklat, golim. Well, isn't that obvious? I mean, b'shogeg golim? It is, but b'mezid neharagim is considered to be a big chiddush. Why? Because in order for the guy to actually be chayev misa, remember you had to give him hatra'ah, right? Well, how exactly did you give him hatra'ah? You might have thought that, look, you're telling him, don't do that, you're going to kill the guy. I mean, that's called hatra'at safek. The guy can look at you like you're crazy. What do you mean, you're going to kill the guy? We're just playing a nice little game. You know, I wish things were so simple that just because I'd like the ball to get in that direction, it's going to go in that direction. Mi yemar dahadra? Do you think that I'm such an expert that I can actually get it to go exactly there? Kamashmalan, that's not called a hatra'at safek, that if the person knows the game and he says, I'm doing this on purpose, and he has to be makabel v'hasra, it's not considered to be hatra'at safek, even though there are so many factors that may affect the outcome. Toni Rav Tachlifa bar Ma'arava kamedu Rabbi Abo. Kagon elu ha-mesachakim bekadur shahargu. So I want to talk about that case, the case of the people that play ball, and this is serious stuff. You know, people get killed playing ball all the time. So if it was toch arba amot, if the person who ended up being hit by the ball was within 4 amas of that wall, so then I say the guy who threw the ball is not chayev. But if he was standing more than 4 amas from the wall, then he is chayev. Huh? I don't understand what that means, says Ravina to Rav Ashi. What is he saying? Echidami, I understand. Isn't it a function of, like, what was the object of the game? I mean, echidami. Idika nechale. If the guy who threw the ball wanted it to go where it went, so then what's the difference? I don't care where he's standing. So afilu purtanami, let him be less than 4 amas. What's the difference? He should be chayev. That's where he wanted the ball to go. I mean, you're trying to get it to someone, right? And if it's the object of the game is to make sure that the person doesn't get it, and idolo nechale, so what's the difference how far away it is? You don't want it to go in that direction, so why are you chayev? Afilu tuva namilo, it was not what you wanted to do. Remember, there's a difference between shogeg, where it's not what you wanted to do, or shogeg, when it is what you wanted to do, but you had no intention of killing. Let's say you had no idea that the guy was there, let's say, right? In this case, it's not what you wanted to do. And if it's not what you wanted to do, that's not what you're chayev the Ari Miklat for. So I don't understand this psak. So Rav Ashi explained to Ravina, look, you need to learn more about ball, you know? When was the last time you went to a ball game anyway, Ravina? Stam mesachakim bekadur, kama da ayale tvei menach nechale. Actually, the closer they are to the wall, the happier they are because they can end up getting a much more powerful rebound. You know, like when you get to the handball and you're right up against that wall, you give it that really powerful hit. So that makes people happy. So they're trying to get the ball to actually have as much koach in it. And because of that, you can say that, generally speaking, a person is not going to want that ball to go less than Arba Amas if he is interested in playing the game properly. Now, the question is, you seem to be taking something for granted. And that is that you are saying that it's considered to be your force, despite the fact that the force was a rebound and that it's not considered to be a new force that is not your chiev, and it would be only koach kocho, but it wouldn't be kocho. But you're saying, l'meimah dekai gavna kochohu, that a ball that's moving in the opposite direction from which it was thrown is still considered to be your direct koach. Now, I got a problem with that from a very interesting place. My problem is from the Mishnah in Masechet Parah. So you'll remember that we recently learned that if somebody was being Mekadesh, meaning he was putting the Efer HaPorah into the water, and over there we learn out from the Natan, it has to be put there with the Koach of an Adam. So he is putting the ash, and what happens is, on the way into the water, some ashes fall on his hand, or on the edge of the shoket, alatzad, ve'acharkach nofal ha-shoket, and from there, they fall off into the shoket. It says you cannot use that to be metayer, because it was not a direct netina. But according to you, even if there is a rebound effect, we still view it as being your original koach. Then it would be included in vinatan. So why do you say that it wouldn't be a kosher frazoya mixture? Nah, that mixture. The Mishnah over there was talking about shotet. You didn't throw it in. It was falling in. So you put it over the water, and then it hit the side. There was a wind or whatever. But there was no koach that you had given to it that was caused the rebound. It landed, and then it just slipped in. So that is not considered to be a koach at all. Toshma. Okay, I have another Mishnah in Parah that does say what I'm saying. Over there it says that if you had this needle that was tummy, and you wanted it to become tar. So it's very small. So you put it down on a piece of cheres, broken cheres, right? And you now take your mei parah and you do the hazoya on it. But you don't know whether the drops of water landed directly on the needle. You go and look at it and you see that the needle is wet. But can you be sure how it got wet? Because Sufik ala machatiza, Sufik ala cheresiza umitzaileha. I mean, look, it might, I mean, you're talking about drops of water. So a drop of water might have hit the earthenware, piece of earthenware it was on, and then bounced off and landed on the needle. So the fact that it's wet doesn't prove anything, and you're not sure whether it was a bounce or whether it was a direct hit. That's what the Mishnah seems to be saying. Problem is, according to you, it doesn't matter whether it's a bounce or a direct hit, because a bounce from a actual zrika is the equivalent of a direct hit, since you claim it's considered to be kocho. It's a brilliant question, right? Two sugyas you never would have thought are related. So why does it say azata psula? Omer evchina nabayuda mishmei derav. You've got the wrong word in the girsa of the Mishnah. You said sufik ala cheres hiza umitza aleha. Mitza would mean it bounced. The correct word in the Mishnah is umatza aleha. You found the water, which means it didn't bounce. It simply flowed and ended up making everything, as it spread, wet. Well, that would not be considered to be on the bounce, and because of that, it would not be considered kocho, and would not be a kosher hazoya. Omer of Papa, I had another question. A guy ties somebody up, Haiman de Kafte Lechavre, and he puts him in front of a dam. And Ashkel alai bitka demaya. So what he does is, he pulls out a little plug in the dam, allowing some water to shoot out, and that shoot out water goes and kills that guy, he is chayev, because that water is considered to be the exact equivalent of shooting an arrow at him. Because consider, how do you shoot an arrow? You have potential energy that is in the arrow, right? Now, suppose somebody else pulled back the arrow, handed the arrow to you. You are now holding the arrow with the other guy's energy in it. Okay, so now you've got potential energy, which upon release of the arrow from your fingers is going to be shooting this other guy in the heart. Are you chayev? Yes. That is what it means to shoot an arrow. So over here, you have a dam that's holding back the energy of this water that is, I mean, gravity is urging it on. I mean, come on, baby. And all of that energy is in that water, and it's all being held back by that plug. And now you pull out the plug. You just release the arrow. Therefore, this water is an arrow. Gire di Deo. It's beautiful. Gire di Deo. That's your arrow. So why would you not be chayav? But that's only bekoach rishon. That's only where the energy in the water reaches him directly. If the water now gets out and starts to flow to him, that's not that's just the groma. You release that energy which got the water there. Now the water is going to be flowing there. That's a groma. And koach sheni, a secondary koach, that's an only a groma. Furthermore, says Rav Papa, I got another deal for you. You throw a stone straight up in the air, right? That's what you think. Now, in fact, the stone describes this parabola, and it ends up falling a little bit to the side where your erstwhile friend, in this case, he's really erstwhile, your erstwhile friend was standing and smashes his skull. So the question is over there. I say, even though there, you're also chayev. Amalei marbar avashi Rav Papa. Now, wait a minute. That's not called a rebound. This is new energy that's coming. You put it in a place where now the energy that you had imparted to it was potential energy. What happened was, is that then gravity took over because of its location, and the actual koach was imparted to it by gravity. So, I mean, consider, think about it. If this is his koach, so then it should have gone straight upwards if he really was throwing it in that direction. So then what happened over here is that it must be that you're looking at the energy of gravity, says Rav Papa, really now. And if it's not his koach, so he explained to me, why didn't gravity pull it straight down? I'll tell you why, dear sir. You have to analyze the separate forces of this vector. The gravity was pulling down from the point where he had thrown it, but obviously it should have come straight down. That means that he must have thrown it to the side. Now, the vector to the side is what got this guy's head crushed. So that means he threw it on this guy's head, and that's the part that got it on the head. It's true, it may be only a very tiny proportion of the original force, but that's not the point. It's a kocho, but it's koach kochushu. You saw what you thought was a stone that was thrown up into the air. Okay, that's what you saw. But the way it came down, it's quite clear that what you saw was not the whole story. Beautiful, no? See, all taking all of these things into consideration is a pashtus in the Gemara. Oh, well, the rest of the world will have to wait a few hundred years. Okay, Rabosai.